coming up on Path to Zero.
The wonderful part of the whole concept of zero net energy is it's really practical and it's really obtainable, and it doesn't have to be horribly expensive.
Welcome to Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low carbon future. Your host is Tucker Perkins, engineer, entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, and clean energy industry veteran, who now serves as president and CEO of the Propane Education and Research Council. Now, here's Tucker.
Thanks for joining another episode of Path to Zero. When it comes to mitigating the effects of climate change, buildings play an important role. United Nations report says that the energy used to build and operate our buildings could account for nearly 40% of the world's carbon emissions. One strategy that's been gaining a lot of interest is the design of net zero energy buildings, an idea that can be easily designed into residential projects. We have an expert today on net zero homes joining us on this episode, and he's earned that expert title as he's been a leader in green building for nearly 40 years. David Knight's the founder of Monterey Energy Group, which has been a driving force in promoting and designing net zero energy homes and buildings. At the Propane Education and Research Council, we've gotten to know David quite well. He recently participated in a webinar we hosted on mixed fuel solutions for zero net energy, or ZNE, home design and construction. Welcome, David. It's great to have you as a guest on Path to Zero.
Hey, thanks for having me.
David, you started Monterey Energy Group in 1982, and since that time, I think you've designed hundreds of net zero energy homes. How has your consultancy evolved over those years since 1982?
So when I started Monterey Energy Group, it wasn't exactly a group, it was just me. And we founded the company to do energy compliance work under California's new energy code, which is a performance-based code that limits how much energy new homes can use, new homes, additions, residential, commercial, basically everything. And that's how the company was originally envisioned. 10 years or so in, we got a mechanical engineering license, and we've gone from, you know, one little person sitting in an office to 13 full-time. We're licensed in five states and one of the very few mechanical engineering companies that really focuses on residential projects. And we started promoting zero net energy homes in about 2007, as we started to see the prices of solar electricity coming down, the efficiency of buildings going up, and zero net energy for us just became a very logical goal for people building construction projects, mainly in California.
Yeah, super logical. And let's start with the basics for a moment. Listeners who may not be familiar with zero net energy, what exactly is the definition of a ZNE home?
So there's two kind of working definitions. The first is zero net energy electric, meaning that everything that is going to use electricity, your lights, appliances, plug-in loads, air conditioning, you know, water pumps, you know, swimming pool filter pumps, electric cars, outdoor lighting, anything like that, you try to either in California, we try to offset that amount of energy with solar provided electricity to zero it out over the entire year. And what people need to understand is, you know, California might as well be its own country when it comes to zero net energy. And the reason is, in California, we have fantastic, at least fantastic if you're a customer or somebody who has solar. The rules are all in the solar customer's favor, and they're very much not in the favor of the utility. And it's a big deal because we have this thing, we have annual net metering, which means that every home that has solar, the best way to think of it, Tucker, is you have two electric meters. One meter keeps track of how much energy you use over the year, and the other keeps track of how much energy you produce. And the goal is to zero out your usage over the course of the year. And that is tremendously powerful when it comes to solar, because you can overproduce all summer long when it's sunny and the sun's high in the sky and this and that, and you can float through the winter. Keep in mind, and you combine that with California having lots of sunshine, mild climates, it's just a perfect storm for zero net energy electric to be a logical decision. Oh, and I forgot the most important thing is that our grid electric prices are the second highest in the country. You've got Hawaii and then you've got California. We have ratepayers paying up to 50 cents a kilowatt hour for electricity. Compare that to Texas or Virginia, you're probably in the low teens. Well, when you're comparing solar provided electricity to the grid at 50 cents, it's a no-brainer for most people.
And so most of the homes you design today, are you trying to aspire to a ZNE electric home or really just a ZNE home that may use some alternative sources for those heavy loads like heat or hot water?
Right. So for the last 10, 15 years, we've been mainly focusing on ZNE electric. That was the most cost-effective option. But what's happened in California, again, think of California like its own universe. Over 70 California cities have outlawed new gas hookups. And so in these cases, you know, they're not giving people a choice. They have to go all electric. They have to use electricity for space heating and domestic hot water and cooking, clothes drying, things like that. It's tough.
Yeah, those are fairly energy intensive applications, some of those things you just mentioned.
Absolutely. And the other issue is some of those, again, California is a mild climate. So when we're using heat pumps for space heating, you know, it's for the most part, it works pretty well. But California also encompasses Lake Tahoe and Mammoth, where, you know, it's not just the temperatures go down to, you know, minus 20, but 6 months of the year, people's homes, therefore their solar panels are covered in snow. And so it's much harder in climates like that. For coastal California, it's a hardship, but it's possible, with the exception of domestic hot water, because the devices that we can use for domestic hot water, the non-gas appliances just don't work as well. There are units called, you know, heat pump water heaters, and they're expensive, they're noisy, they produce a lot of cold air, so you have to be careful where they're located, and they just don't recover as quickly as the gas units. And most of our plumbers have never installed them, so things like parts and service are a little bit of a challenge as well.
Yeah, so it's funny, California, I think about that all the time. I think the coast or the length of California is about 770 miles from south to north. And I think about the variation in climate from Southern California, San Diego.
Yeah.
You think about those northern climates, it's fairly cold in the winter. And I suspect the sun's not as quite as potent as it is in South Carolina. So you really even inside the state, you have to think about quite a different set of design criteria depending on where you are, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, we work throughout the state and we have a bunch of projects in Lake Tahoe right now. And it's just a completely different discussion that we're having than compared to projects on the coast. And then in the central part of the state, again, a completely different set of, it's a different climate. It's very, very hot all summer long. And it can often be cold and foggy, very low fog cover in the wintertime. They have this radiation fog that settles in the Central Valley that can last for weeks at a time. So, no, there's very, and then we have the desert. I mean, we have projects in Palm Springs where we're designing cooling systems for when it's when it's, you know, 115 degrees outside. Lot of challenges.
So when you design most of these homes, how reliant are you on the grid for your power? Or maybe alternatively, how much are you relying on generating power in the home?
Right. So right now, the grid is the world's greatest and cheapest backup battery for Californians. That's changing. But the last 15 years or so, people could use the grid as their backup, as their nighttime, energy use, as their, that's not sunny. So, I mean, the grid was, again, people didn't have to pay for it. They just had to, it was just always there. That's changing, and it's changing for a couple of reasons. One is our grid is becoming less reliable. You know, we're having rolling blackouts or brownouts, and so that becomes an issue. And then we're having, you know, we've always had certain, you know, storm-related, you know, winter storm-related power outages, but now we're having in the summertime, you know, additional power outages. Further, you know, the people who operate the grid, you know, the utilities, they're really trying to get the rules changed to where people don't get this free access to this backup. And that's where energy storage come in, and that's where backup generation through backup generators come in. I think one of the really fun topics is there's a big trend towards people going off-grid. And there's several really good reasons for it, but it's critical to understand that off-grid means you're using a really good and properly sized backup gas generator. Because there's no way you can be off-grid and survive without gas, either because of, cloudy weather in the wintertime, or, you know, there's no way it works out. I mean, it's functionally impossible not to use gas for off-grid when, for space heating, domestic hot water, and of course your backup electrical generation. It's just,
yeah. Critical. And, I'm very encouraged as a group that tends to invest in a lot of that technology. I'm really impressed as we see what it used to be just a backup generator, just, you know, designed to work intermittently and be there when you needed it. But now we're progressing to designs, and really modern designs, that are there for you for prime power. And as you say, to work in concert. Let me ask about that, though. One of the things that I often hear from practitioners is that while it all works to have solar and wind and a gas generator and water heater, the controls and that strategy are almost impossible to manage at the residential level. Do you find that to be a true statement? Or in fact, can you have the control strategy that directs the renewable sources and the needed sources? Can you get that control strategy to work now pretty well in a residential application?
I mean, it's just now getting worked out, but I think it was a very true statement. Now it's getting more worked out. And it's because the demand for going off grid is just exploding. I mean, you think about what's happened the last couple of years with COVID. People have figured out they can work from anywhere. You know, so all of a sudden, you know, buying some property that's a little bit outside of town that's not served from the grid, you know, which those properties are very, very affordable. Well, now you can not only afford that, but you can work from there. I mean, that helps out. The second thing is that, at least in California, and I think it's pretty true everywhere else, the cost to hook up the grid has just gone up incredibly. Our utilities in California have figured out 100 ways to lose money. And solar, trust me, hasn't helped in that. They've figured out one way to make money, and that is to increase the price to hook up to the grid, whether it's the gas grid or the electric grid. We've had customers who in the past, you know, the utility would give you a really good deal to set an electric and gas meter because they knew you were going to be spending the next 30 years buying their product, if not longer. Now, people hook up to the grid, and they put in solar panels, which offsets most of their electric usages. They put in, you know, gas furnaces or boilers and water heaters and things. But keep in mind, through more efficiency, you know, or more insulation, better windows, LED lights, Energy Star appliances, they're not using half as much energy as they used to. So the consumption goes down. Solar's producing mostly electricity. What's left is not that much. And so the utility said, wait a second, you know, we're not making as much as we used to. Let's just charge them up front. So now what they'll do is somebody who hooks, you know, hooking up to their gas meter used to be a few thousand dollars. Now it could be 30. Hooking up to the electric meter, at least that much, if not more. And so when you have, say, 50,000, if you're facing, say, $50,000 to hook up to the grid, And we're in a state where solar for a new house is mandatory. Batteries aren't mandatory, but most people are choosing to install them because the grid is unstable anyway. You take that money that you would have paid the utility to hook up to the grid, you buy a few more solar panels, maybe another battery or two, and a really good gas or propane, well, let's just say propane generator. And now you've got everything you had before. If anything, it's more secure than the grid was. You're not subject to brownouts or blackouts. You're not subject to power outages based on storms or anything. You're completely independent, and you really haven't probably paid an extra nickel to set it up. That's where I think things are, at least in the rural areas of California, for sure. And I think most of the other country, that's going to be a huge trend going forward. Tucker, you made a great point about, you know, the controls and the interconnection and all that. And it's certainly there now. It's just, you know, obviously some training needs to come by for the installers, but the products are there to be installed with the proper design.
Yeah, I'm really glad to see that materializing, because I think that's probably has been the last key for us that we saw that really needs that needs to be figured out. Because in industrial situations or commercial situations, you usually have a technician at their beck and call, but in a residential application, it needs to work pretty well and be able just to call a technician when it realizes it's sick.
Yeah.
You know, as you're talking about those extreme costs, I can't help but think about, for a lot of people that can afford Teslas and can afford these beautiful homes, that it's a positive thing. But so much of the conversation around this shift to electricity and what many people would call beneficial electrification is that it's good for environmental justice and equity. And, you know, you talk about the practicality of someone being required to use solar panels and maybe being required to sign up. And yet those are exorbitant costs. I've been associated with building most of my career, and fortunately those aren't prices we're having to pay yet on the East Coast, but I suspect it's coming. How do you wrestle with this dichotomy between environmental justice and equity and forcing these solutions on people who are clearly not capable of paying for those solutions?
Right. Well, I can't say I'm in favor of mandates of any kind. But in California, it's just the reality.
I think it's one of the things that strikes me on this show. So many people come on to Path to Zero and their whole career has been dedicated to equity and justice and protecting whoever they're trying to protect, people of color, indigenous people, whatever. And I don't feel like they really understand sometimes the implications of their best intentions, that it's going to be an expensive world that they envision. And the people that they are trying to most protect could be impacted the most.
And yeah.
Yeah, I know you don't subscribe to that theory, but as an engineer and someone who's playing in that space, I'm always looking for more voices that either understand it or will explain it back to me, because as a outsider looking in, it doesn't compute to me.
Right. Well, again, if you we discuss solar electric as one way to provide electricity for your home. And we look at it for the most part in strictly economic terms. And, you know, that actually in California, where we have incredibly high grid rates, where we have lots of sunshine, and where we have this annual net metering rules, the economics are often really good. You know, 5-year payback is not uncommon, which, you know, relates to a 20% return on investment. Many of the solar companies have, you know, zero down loans and things like that to help it go down easier. So there is, and again, compared to our grid, which is so unbelievably expensive, you know, there is a story there. I've often said in terms of solar, my favorite client is a hard-nosed conservative accountant when it comes to solar, because they'll look at the numbers just flat out as numbers and what's the better value. And that's why, you know, sizing solar to offset the energy uses over an annual basis can work out for the electric appliances, you know, for the electric usages. For things that can be used with gas, with propane, your space heating, your domestic hot water, your cooking, clothes drying, things like that, it's a different story. And, but, you know, in California now, you know, we're facing this all electric mandate in certain communities. It hasn't gone statewide yet, but, you know, who knows what will happen in the future.
When you're talking to other architects or builders or maybe even specifying engineers about your solutions, what resistance do you find from them most often?
So, you know, we're involved with, you know, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, you know, indoor air quality issues for the most part, as well as solar and energy storage. I would say the biggest pushback is always, well, two things. Well, with solar, it's aesthetics and initial cost, as you point out. With our HVAC, you know, options, it's always about space. You know, modern homes just do not leave room for mechanical equipment. I mean, everything is, in fact, we define modern homes as designs that do not allow for conventional ducting. I mean, it could look like whatever it's going to look like, but in the end, there's no room for mechanical equipment. So we're always trying to develop, you know, creative solutions that will make a home comfortable, that will produce, you know, proper and, you know, indoor air quality and things like that. But we're just given a fair, you know, a very limited amount of space to do that in. Back to the solar, you know, it's all about aesthetics. Right now, it's mostly about aesthetics and first cost. You know, those are the two issues.
And when you reach into solar, are you generally talking about solar rooftop tiles or PV panels, or I don't know, what's the go-to method now for solar?
Yeah, still the conventional solar electric panels. Prices come down. There are some other kind of, you know, unique products out there. Tesla's roof is just getting introduced. It's been a very bumpy road, but there's some possibilities there. It's mostly just regular solar electric panels. And your
residential clients. So we talked about the construction professionals, but now let's talk about your residential clients. Are they driven generally by a need to be good to the environment? Or are they driven by other needs like cost or reliability?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. We do get some jobs where people are actually, you know, taking, you know, disconnecting from the gas grid and trying to go all electric on existing homes. We get a few of those jobs, kind of getting more and more of them. It's a hard proposition to do that. It's much easier when you're starting from scratch. I don't know. It's a pretty good split. It's California. We do have some people who are, that's a real, you know, the, that's a mode, you know, being good to the environment. I think it's a motivation for every human being. I've never met anybody who didn't want to be that way. But same time, they want what they can afford, and they have, you know, they have other issues too in terms of, you know, building their dream house. They have lots of dreams. I think one of the things that we look at is, and I think people are starting to look at more, is, okay, what is, over the course of the next 20 to 30 years, you know, what can we do to make the house, you know, more comfortable, have better indoor air quality, have lower maintenance, lower operating costs? And I think that's the way we're trying to look at it more and more.
Talk to me about maybe how you see clean energy sources, and I'll say propane is one, but I think certainly natural gas is that other. How do these low carbon sources, you think, really fit into a zero net energy design? And you've talked about electric, ZNE electrical only, but clearly there is that second choice. How, and you've talked about it a little bit, but maybe help our listeners understand maybe how propane or natural gas fit into a ZNE design.
Right. I think that, well, it certainly makes it so much easier when we're not having to look at the at the energy consumption from space heating and domestic hot water, that's number one. It's much easier to design a system that uses natural gas for domestic hot water and space heating, and those systems flat out work better. If we go to an electric heat pump for space heating and domestic hot water, they can work out. They're just not as good. I mean, the colder it gets, the heat pump, you know, the air coming out of it isn't maybe as quite as warm as it would be with a gas furnace. If we're doing hydronic heating and we compare using a gas, you know, water heater or boiler to an air to water heat pump, the colder it gets outside, the lower the output of the unit is with the heat pump and the lower the temperature that you're getting out of it. So it has those two disadvantages. So if you're in a place like Lake Tahoe, it just can't really achieve the same level of comfort as you can with propane. So, but again, like I go back to 70 California cities have outlawed new gas. So we're stuck in those communities. It can work out okay. And the only other part of it is, again, which makes the all electric true zero net energy option something that people are strongly considering, or they have to do it, is either because, again, they're mandated to do it, or they're in a mild enough climate like San Diego where it can work out pretty good. But keep in mind, when the natural gas grid becomes really expensive to hook up to, that's when people are either going to go all electric or bring propane in, you know, one or the other, because
it's that is certainly a real different model than has been in the past, but we see it time and time again. Hey, one last question. In most of your systems, the batteries, are they, what kind of batteries are you using? Are you using lithium batteries now, or?
We're just starting. The battery market is exploding in California, but it's still, it's only been the last couple of years. It's a combination of our grid being down, you know, summer forest fires or brownouts when it gets hot. People have decided to either looking at backup generators or batteries or both. In fact, that's part of the market. The other part of the market is our state energy code, which is known as Title 24, now gives you a compliance credit to put in batteries. And so that's become, that's a driver of the market. There's a couple good battery products on the market, Tesla's Powerwall, LG's SunVault, SunPower's SunVault, LG Chem has a battery product, Enphase has a battery product.
Are they about the size of, say, a dorm refrigerator? And are they mounted in the basement, or where are they put outside?
Typically they're mounted on a high wall in a garage, and they're maybe, 2 feet wide, 4 feet tall, 5 feet tall, maybe 18 inches thick. They kind of look like a big tankless water heater. Mm-hmm. They're modular, so you can just line them up. Our electrical engineer has, I think, four of them in his home, and has ordered another five, because his goal is to have at least 2 weeks of uninterrupted power stored for his home, and as a way of preparing for emergencies, and as well as being kind of, truly energy independent.
Yeah, I think Winter Storm Uri in Texas kind of showed us that 2 weeks is probably not an unreasonable period of time to be prepared to go it alone in the new world we're going to see.
Yeah, but you can imagine, you put in a propane backup generator, with maybe a couple of batteries, so that you don't have the constant operation. It's just there to top off the batteries, and at that point you get pretty much unlimited power, for weeks at a time.
Yeah, for the builders we work with, I think that clearly to me looks like such a smart system, because you're able to downsize your solar system, downsize your batteries. I mean, it just seems to make everything work. Your energy intensive applications, as you say, heat when it's cold, cooking, maybe hot water, that takes that load off of everything.
Well, so, and again, if you can subtract out the cost to hook up the grid, then that helps to the gas grid, and that helps pay for the generator, and that pays for the battery, which in many markets, definitely in California today, but in many markets going forward, it's going to be a tremendous market, or it's going to be, I think it's going to be a huge trend. And again, now that house is completely independent. Now they're not concerned about anything. They truly are prepared for pretty much anything that can happen.
It's time for a break, and then we'll get right back into this great conversation in just a moment.
Zero is a big number. Getting close to a future of zero emissions starts with using the broadest mix of clean, low-carbon energy sources. You might be surprised to know that propane produces a lot of energy for thousands of purposes and millions of people with virtually zero particulate matter, zero impact to the ozone, zero toxicity, and zero potential for storage-related contamination. It's low NOx and low CO2 to boot. Path to Zero is sponsored by Propane, Clean American Energy. Learn more at cleanamericanenergy.us.
As you think about federal codes or other codes, maybe in states contiguous to California, clearly Monterey Energy Group works a much wider swath than just California. Do you see the federal codes or state codes moving towards adopting maybe where California is today, or do you see a different model?
Yeah, I know that Washington State earlier this year enacted a performance-based energy code kind of modeled after California. Most of the other areas that we work in have a pretty simple set of energy-related requirements that just relate to the building envelope. Just you have to meet minimum efficiency related to insulation levels and glass performance. Very simple. They're not tied to HVAC. They're not tied to domestic hot water. There's no solar tie-in, anything like that, at least as of today. Where it's going to go, I don't know. The only state I know of that has something similar to California is Washington, and that just happened. Keep in mind, California's performance-based energy code started in 82. So we're going on 40 years. And it took 39 of them to have another state duplicate it. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen next. I just don't know. I have no idea what's going to happen.
Well, let's have some fun now. We have a lot of fun traditions on Path to Zero. And one of those involves the lovely magic wand. And so, you know, I really know you're an expert in this residential design space around ZNE. I want to give you this magic wand, and I'm going to let you wave it and change one thing in the next year regarding climate change, the energy conversation, and perhaps to adjust it to something that you know a lot about. How would you use your magic wand to change or see something done differently that will dramatically improve our ability to move towards a true zero emissions future? How would you use that wand?
I think that the biggest need for improvement needs to happen is in energy storage, is in batteries. You know, whether it's bringing the cost down, certainly in the way that the batteries are manufactured, is there a way to make that less damaging to the overall environment? I think that's where the biggest improvement for anything related to renewable energies is all about energy storage. And until that gets worked out, there's certain things that can be done, but to me, that's where the biggest need for improvement is going to happen. It's certainly not going to happen in the next 12 months. But I think overall that would be the best thing that could happen.
Well, that's a great use of that wand. I do agree with you, and I say it often, that clearly the grid is going to change. And I do think the solution around batteries, we don't know it yet, right? I think whatever whatever's going to be the next best thing in batteries, we haven't really revealed it yet, but it will happen. And I think then it will make a material change in these systems that we're talking about, because these are systems, right? It's right. I completely agree with you. I want to compliment you and your firm. I'm going to give you a chance to talk about anything that you want to tell our listeners about yourself, your work, or Monterey Energy Group. But let me start by giving you an accolade, because as I was preparing for this podcast, I realized that you were the mechanical engineer of record for the 2021 Residential Design Architectural Award Project of the Year. And that is not an insignificant award. In fact, that's awarded by nearly 400 fellows of the AIA, quite a prestigious award to be recognized as the Residential Design Architectural Award of the Year. And you were the mechanical engineer for that project. So congratulations. What else do you want our listeners to know about what you're doing at Monterey Energy Group?
Well, so our goal is to be a single source of objective, solid engineering for anything related to HVAC, you know, heating, ventilating, air conditioning, plumbing, electrical, and solar. I mean, that's our goal. And I think one of the key aspects of that is we look at every project like it was our own home. And we try to, you know, work with the clients and, you know, to hear what, I mean, I think our favorite part of it is to hear directly from the clients, the people building their dream home, of exactly how they want it to operate. And it's a really fun process. So, I mean, it's, we have the world's greatest job. The people are very excited about building the home or remodeling their home. And it's been really, I think besides the fact that we get to work on some really cool projects, the people here, our culture is very different than most engineering companies. You know, we try to be as helpful as possible. And I think I come from a teaching background. So I think that the way we go about jobs is just different. You know, we listen to the client. It's not we're telling them what to do. They're telling us what they want. We try to give them, you know, some options and some good information. And that's all we do. And it's been a great job.
Well, I certainly appreciate the work you've done. I feel like you've been a beacon of truth in many respects, that while ZNE is an admirable goal, it doesn't necessarily speak to the exclusion of low carbon fuels for doing the jobs they do best. And I think that's where we always try to come to, is whether we're talking about buildings or agriculture or transportations or even power, rarely does one solution fit all things. It's usually a wider path. And that's really one reason we call this the Path to Zero. I think we always advocate for a wider path. Well, I want to thank you for the time you spent with us. And we have some great fun with that. When we started this Path to Zero, we planted the Propane National Forest. It's a virtual national forest that we use to thank our guests. And we've put some trees in some great places, and we've put them in California before, but we have a couple favorite forests that aren't very far from you: the Sierra National Forest, the El Dorado National Forest near Lake Tahoe. You might even have a favorite forest, but we would love to plant a tree in California in your name and in your honor for this appearance. Do you have a favorite place you'd like us to plant it?
I hadn't really thought about that. You know, I do spend a fair amount of time in Lake Tahoe, so let's go El Dorado.
I was kind of hoping you would pick that, because it's such a gorgeous place. And as we think about this earth and our climate and our impact on it, I don't think there's a much better place to think about it than Lake Tahoe. So thank you. With El Dorado National Forest, it will be. You have been a terrific guest, and I want to thank you for appearing on Path to Zero and spending some time with us. Thank you,
Dave. Okay, thank you.
This has been Path to Zero with Tucker Perkins. Subscribe and learn more at cleanamericanenergy.us. And if you like what you have heard, rate us on whatever platform you use to listen to your podcasts.